Welcome to episode 65 of the Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. This episode is a recording of an April 2024 WordPress accessibility meetup where Anna and Susie from Funka, the organization that founded the International Association of Accessibility Professionals, or IAAP, help us better understand European accessibility laws and how to approach compliance while creating inclusive and enjoyable digital experiences. WordPress accessibility meetups take place via Zoom webinars twice a month, and anyone can attend. For show notes, a full transcript, and additional information about meetups, go to accessibilitycraft.com/065. And now, on to the show.
So I am very excited to introduce our speakers today, Anna and Susie. Anna is the Chief Marketing Officer at Funka, and Susie is Chief Accessibility Officer at Funka. And I'll probably let you both introduce yourselves, but we are very excited to have you here and sharing your expertise on European accessibility laws, because we've had a lot of attendees asking questions about it. And I know there's a lot of concern about what's going to happen in June 2025. So we very much appreciate it. And I'm going to stop sharing. I will let you share. For everyone who's attending, we will do Q&A at the end. So if you can please type any questions that you have in the Q&A module, that will help us to keep track of them. And then I will pop in at the end so that our speakers can answer them.
Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you, Amber. And thank you, Paolo, for inviting us. It's lovely to be here today with my colleague, Susanna, as well as Susie, as we say. We, as you heard, we come from Funka, who's been around since, I think, 1999 within the accessibility industry. I mean, we started before there were regulations and laws on the topic as such. And we have worked with everything from research to innovation to training, accessibility programs and user testing. So lots of highs and lows. But today we're going to give an overview of the accessibility directives within the European Union. We're not going to go through every single one of them and not in depth, but we're going to present an overall so that you also understand which ones are relevant and what's happening, as you all are familiar with, next year, 2025. So with that, my name is Anna Malmberg. And I will let Susie continue with the presentation.
Perfect. Okay, so I will introduce myself. My name is Susana Pajero. As I said, I am from Argentina. So sorry if you don't understand some word that I might be mispronouncing or something, feel free to ask again. You know, as they say, behind a strong accent, there's a lot of bravery. So it's not easy to be here. Well, I have been working in accessibility for over 10 years. And actually, I saw between the names of the people here that Olga Carreras is here. And I highly recommend her. She's an amazing professional from Spain. And I started with her. And I mean, like, reading all the content she generates. And well, I'm a huge fan. All right, so I started over 10 years ago. And right now I am a W3C invited expert in the COGA division, that is the Cognitive and Learning Disabilities Accessibility. I also was part of conformance, policy, and in the maturity model task force. I am CPWA certified, and I have diplomas in human rights of the 21st century, in equality and empowerment of women, and in women's rights. And right now, I am a professor of the Master of Digital Accessibility at the University of Barcelona.
Yes, thank you. And I will present myself. As I said, my name is Anna Malmberg. I am a CPAC certified professional with the IAAP, which is the International Accessibility Organization of International Association of Accessibility Professionals. I'm sorry, I always mix that abbreviation up. I work as a chief marketing officer today at Funka, But besides that, I also do a lot of talks and I advocate accessibility. And I was previously the founder of Funke Academy, which is an online training platform similar to that of DQ that I'm sure you're familiar to, working with making accessibility knowledge and competence more available on your own term as such, because it's an on-demand platform. Otherwise, I work with accessibility and inclusion. It's a deep passion. I am a mother and I am a daughter. So it's in my everyday life. And with age, we all will get there eventually. But today, Susie?
All right. So today we will have mainly four topics. The first one is digital accessibility is a human right. Then we will differentiate what compliance is and what conformance is. Then we will talk a little bit about the main laws and standards in Europe. And then we will give you some tips for compliance and conformance. Well, let's start. I think this is the main point of this entire talk, the fact that digital accessibility is a human right. Okay, so the international treaties, right, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights by the United Nations recognizes access by all people to fundamental human rights, okay? And that is why it is considered in most legal bodies in the world, especially those that subscribed to the declaration, okay? So this is an important point. Creating an inaccessible product is a violation of human rights. Which specific human rights it speaks about? It is the human right of access to information, right? The Article 19 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights says that everybody, like all people in the world, has the right to investigate and receive information and opinions and to disseminate them without limitations of borders by any means of expression. And of course, that internet is one of the main communication ways right now. But it is important to understand that this is kind of old, right? And of course, that in this moment, we didn't know the impact, the actual impact that internet would have in society. So even though it is something, accessibility as a human right is something that comes from the right to access to information, there's different rights that are now developed and guaranteed in the internet, such as access to education, to health, to work, okay? So it even opens more possibilities. Another important international treaty is the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. Well, this convention shows two main points that I would say are the most important. First of all, it gives us the definition of disability. And that is something that we must address when we work in accessibility, that it's not a medical definition of disability, the one we work with. We work with a social model and definition of disability. That means that what we are going to put the focus on is in what people can do, right? Like what people can do, and from that, we will design and develop our digital products, okay? And the second point is that it recognizes that the implementation of accessibility and universal design is a mean to ensure equality for people with disabilities. So it is pretty clear and it goes closer to what we actually do in the digital world. Okay, now that we have this base, that we understand this big umbrella, because it is the obligation of states to comply and enforce the human rights, then different laws, and Anna will go through that in more detail, but that is why there's so many laws that enforce human rights. But before we move on, it is important to understand the difference between compliance and conformance, right? So compliance is technically what says what we need to comply with, right? So let's give you an example. We have a law, and the law just says you must ensure access to everyone, you know? And it doesn't, it's not important if it's someone with disabilities or not. It is for everyone, for all people, with and without disabilities, okay? For example, ADA would be an example of an anti-discrimination law, right? It says access to all people is what we look for. So the law will tell me, well, this must be accessible, but then is what is accessible? What is accessible, what it is and what it's not. And that's an objective point. It is a point of reference. And that is what standards are there for, right? So standards will tell us how we actually achieve that accessibility that is enforced by the law. Okay, so for example, in the ADA, the judge, what they would do is, well, how do I know objectively that something is accessible or not? Well, I will refer to the international standard that the last one officially published, that in this case is WCAG 2.2, and I will take this standard as the point of reference of, well, this is accessible or it is not. So in the terms that we use, we comply with laws, we conform to standards. It is true that you will find, when you Google about it and things like that, maybe you will find these terms used indistinctly, but the right way would be compliance is legal compliance and it's standard conformance. All right. So I think that, well, so far, there's any questions, because we have the Q&A open all the time. So just put in there. And well, now we will start talking about specifically the European Union digital accessibility laws, policies, and standards. So, Anna?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Susie. Yes, so we will talk about digital accessibility in the EU. And as Susie has explained, the difference between a regulation and the standards, because in Europe, our laws or the directives, as I'll explain later, we don't point to exactly how. We point to the standards, and in the standards, it then says the variations of what we need to do and how to do that. It's not in our laws as such. So, but first, the European Union, I'm showing a map of the markets and highlighted in a darker color with it, which are member states. I'm not sure of the exact number that we are, but it's a huge chunk of Europe. And what is good to know is that we are all based, and we all believe, and we all have signed the UN Convention, as previously mentioned, and we have all ratified it. That means that we have agreed and we have signed to uphold it. So in the European Union, our laws and regulations are based actually from the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. And for some reason, there we go. The first slide is presenting the CRPD, as it's also called. So everything that we do within the UN, the European Union, is actually based on this. Our strategies, our politics, our actions that we do. And based on the convention, we then actually have a disability strategy within the European Union for all of the member states. This is, it's updated, say, every 10 years, but it's usually for a longer period of maybe 20, 30 years so that we can actually do something with it. And the European Commission creates these disability strategies that will cover a decade long. And within these strategies, there's lots of different kinds of activities that are then based on the CRPD, initiatives, research, we do projects, and also those legal acts. So from disability strategies, we have the directives. So an EU directive is actually, it's a legal term, which means that we are bound to the directive, and the directive is the minimum standard. It's the minimum requirement that we need to bring into national law instead of, say, the GDPR, which is a regulation, R at the end, GDPR regulation. We just need to take it in. We can't change anything in it, but with a directive, we can mold it into a national law so that it fits with our other laws, but we need to bring in the entire directive, but we can add other things to it. So when it comes to the accessibility directives that cover disability rights and the convention, we have the procurement directive, the web accessibility directive, and the European Accessibility Act, which is the one that's coming next year. So we've already got two in place. I'll go through these in a little while. What I would like to show is also that they are actually based on standards. So this is what Susie mentioned before. The directives come into place. We create the directives. Then each of the member states, each of the countries need to bring that into their own legal national law. And then they point to the European standards. The reason for this is because in the European Union, we have together agreed on that we won't have our own standards for each country. Part of us being in the European Union is that we have a harmonized, we have the same standards in all of Europe, which means if I buy a product from Ireland or Spain, it doesn't matter. I can expect the same norm, and I will know that my accessibility technology or my assistive technology will work on that product or service that I buy. And that goes for everything, not just within accessibility. It goes for housing, for schools, for cars. It's everything. It's a standard. The procurement directive, I will go through separately. But the Web Accessibility Directive and the European Accessibility Act, they share a common goal of improving digital accessibility and inclusivity. The Web Accessibility Directive targets the public sector, and the EEA, as it's called, the European Accessibility Act, EAA, my bad, extends its scope to various products and services across different sectors. And I will go through those in detail. So to go back and explain, digital accessibility in the EU is a decision made on EU level, a directive. This is then implemented into national law for each of the countries, which means we have a bunch of different roles in each country. So the laws we have in Sweden are different from Finland and Ireland and Germany and Spain, but we all have the same minimum directives. The minimum requirements are in the directives, yeah.
Sorry, Anna. I think that's something really important to consider, that the directive gives you, let's say, the floor. Like, you cannot go in your national law below what the directive is telling you to do, but you can go over it. So maybe in a national level, you will have additional requirements or something that is more complex than actually the directive. So that is why we are mentioning this. And it is important that you address also national laws. You know?
Absolutely. And that is why the reason for this also being that when we then go from an EU directive to national law, we have the minimum standard, but we also have the European standard, so the requirements and the framework that we need to work on. And this way, we can actually update the standard more frequently than we can do with the directive or the national laws. Because as we all know, you know, updating a law takes a lot of time. It's tedious and it happens once every 20 or 10 years. But a standard you can work on constantly and making sure it's updated with technology or new forthcoming trends or user needs that have arrived on the market. So in the European Union, to conform and to be compliant, you look at the standards, not only the actual directive or the national law in that market.
This episode of Accessibility Craft is sponsored by Equalized Digital Accessibility Checker, the WordPress plugin that helps you find accessibility problems before you hit publish. A WordPress native tool, Accessibility Checker provides reports directly on the post edit screen. Reports are comprehensive enough for an accessibility professional or developer, but easy enough for a content creator to understand. Accessibility Checker is an ideal tool to audit existing WordPress websites, find accessibility problems during new builds, or monitor accessibility and remind content creators of accessibility best practices on an ongoing basis. Scans run on your server, so there are no per-page fees or external API connections. GDPR and privacy compliant. Real-time accessibility scanning. Scan unlimited posts and pages with Accessibility Checker free. Upgrade to a paid version of Accessibility Checker to scan custom post types and password-protected sites. View site-wide open issue reports and more. Download Accessibility Checker free today at equalizeddigital.com/accessibility-checker. Use coupon code accessibilitycraft to save 10% on any paid plan.
I will go through the Procurement Directive, the Procurement Act, as it's also called. It was updated in 2017 to meet the Web Accessibility Directive, as it's called. It's actually a set of guidelines and rules for public procurement. So it was purposed so that society and civilians within each country could access public information from municipalities, from anything that's paid or created or funded with taxpayer money, basically, that you have a right of knowing. And the Procurement Act actually then says you need, there is a mandatory requirement within that. So the Procurement Act is a rules and guidelines for a public procurement process, how to buy a website. When you're procuring a service, if you want subcontractors or suppliers, that you need to make sure that they also follow accessibility requirements. When you're buying a new, say a software system for your intranet or a CMS, a content management system, then you would need to adhere the regulations on these as well. So it actually states mandatory requirements today. And a new thing is that if you're a competitor, you can actually complain and you can request, you know, why was this purchased and what's the difference? So you have the right to attain information as well. So someone can't, even the purchase is made public in simple terms. And when it says further tightening in 2025 in connection with forthcoming legal regulations, that I mean the Web Accessibility Directive and the European Accessibility Act, because they will be updated so that everything complies and matches each other. So obviously the Procurement Act will be updated with that as well. Not sure yet how much or what, because the focus is on next year's legislation with the European Accessibility Act. So covering that public office and bodies and services and municipalities and counties, etc., need to be accessible. After that, there was the European Web Accessibility Directive. It came into force. It's also known as WAD, Web Accessibility Directive, as an abbreviation. The directive mandates that public offices or entities, that their websites and mobile applications have to comply with standards so that individuals with disabilities can access and use the digital content and services provided by the public sector, because that's important. That's a right as a civilian. This includes, for example, government agencies, public institutions, and organizations that are owned and controlled or controlled by the government that provide public service. So to summarize, the Web Accessibility Directive, it came into force 2018, and it's only public sector so far. Well, it won't be anything else. It's just the public sector. It addresses websites, applications, documents, and in that, it actually covers intranets, extranets as well, or external websites that you need to log into. The Web Accessibility Directive refers to an EN standard. So the EN 301549 is in bold because it's the main standard when it comes to digital accessibility, when it comes to ICT services. ICT stands for Internet Communication Technology. So there's lots of national differences between this law as well, because it's a directive. So each of our member states have, you know, transponded it into a national law. And there's variation. So for example, Finland, they've already brought banks and insurances into their scope, into the national law. So they've added onto it, as Susie mentioned before, they've got the minimum requirement, but then they've updated it as well with even more requirements. So if you're working as a supplier to one of the markets in the European Union, it's great to have knowledge of the directives as such, but you would also need to find out what's going on in that specific market. There are specific requirements that are there as well. But it's not that straightforward, unfortunately. So the scope, as I mentioned, the scope is public sector, external websites, intranets, extranets, documents, and apps. There are some exceptions, which are good to know. For example, logos, maps, and third-party applications, for example, aren't actually covered. But you still, per se, have a responsibility when you're bringing those products or services into your domain. You would still need to, as far as you can make something accessible, you are responsible for that. And the presumed conformance, as it's called, it's not presumed, it actually is the conformance. It's the minimum requirements of the directive stating how things are to be accessible is the technical ICT 301549. As I said, so the EN, it stands for European Norm. And the 301449 is just a number. It comes in different versions. The current version is 321. And within this standard, it's actually a 12-chapter document. It's a huge PDF or a web page, depending on how you access it. And for each chapter, it covers different areas. So it covers software, programming, hardware. But in, say, chapter 9, it actually covers the WCAG, the WCAG. So the Web Content Accessibility Guideline is incorporated into Chapter 9. And in the current version, it's 2.1 that we follow within the European Union. And we have AA as a minimum requirement. If you go to Chapter 10 and 11, it also covers document accessibility and EPUB, as well as mobile applications. So if you're working with a React development or an app that you want to do, then it's really good to refer to that document as well, to the EN standard, to make sure that you're doing what you need with biometrics, haptic movements, and so forth, because it's all stated in there as well. So how will this work? And what do I mean with that? So the directive is from the EU, the Commission, and all of the markets have the same directive. We need to report to the Commission and to the UN, actually. We report to the United Nations how we are upholding the CRPD within the European Union, and then for each market. So we actually share a responsibility in each market. So I have a diagram in front of my screen with a process flow that I'm going to go through of the three different large areas and the key elements in both the Web Accessibility Directive and presumably also the European Accessibility Act. But so what happens is that these three key elements is how the web accessibility is enforced. So the first one is the central national review. It's all EU member countries are responsible for enforcement. They have been appointed to a supervisory authority. So in each country, we have an authority that says, you need to do this, we need to know how you're doing, and you need to report that, so that we ensure that each country is following the directive. That governing or the supervisory authority then reports back to the European Commission and says, we're doing great or we're not doing great. And the goal is obviously to improve accessibility in all of Europe, and we don't receive fines because that's part of the sanctioning. The second element, which is also a key element, is what's called an accessibility statement. It's similar to your VPAT, but it's a declaration where we require public sector bodies to publish information about the status of accessibility on their interface or for their website, but it's for the users to understand what works and what doesn't work and what can they do if something doesn't perform or they find a fault. So within the accessibility statement, there actually needs to be, and this is a final key element, which is the diagram at the bottom. It's a bunch of people illustrated that then provide feedback to the institution via the accessibility statement, which is like a document or a web page. So the accessibility statement contains a feedback mechanism. So it's like a small form, for example, or an email function where you can give information to the end user, and they can send feedback saying this doesn't work. But they could also it's also needed that they can they need to be able to report if something doesn't work, not to the person responsible for the website, but they can do that to the governing authority in that country. So you have an accessibility statement that says how the thing works. If it doesn't work, or if you have a question, you should be able to email the responsible and get receive feedback from that. And if it doesn't work and you just want to report something and you're not satisfied with the reply or the help you've given, you can complain. And that was a word I was looking for. Yeah. So there's a complain function.
Yeah. There, FJ is saying in the chat, say it in Swedish, I'm Norwegian, and maybe able to translate.
Yes, thank you. But I remain, it's a complaint functionality. So you can first, I mean, it's a good purpose. You can go to any page that is a public within the public sector in Europe, and you look at the bottom of a website, for example, and you look for an accessibility statement, and that will declare the state of your accessibility. If you have any questions, there's a form where you can contact the owner and say, how does this work? I can't get this to work. What's the problem, et cetera, et cetera. And if you really don't like it and it's not working well, then you can complain to the actual authority in that country, who will then be inspected, actually. And that is where the feedback round goes. It's really, really important that we follow the users and the visitors, because that's why we're doing this. That's the whole purpose of accessibility. So through these three key elements and the interaction between them, the level of accessibility is raised in Europe. So the the concept of the accessibility statement is really, really important for public sector, but for any site, I would say. Any questions so far? Or should we, we'll wait for those, sorry.
There's four amazing questions, but we will answer at the end.
Yeah. So there's a lot of similarities with the next directive I'm going to talk about, which is more, I think, more relevant for a lot of us here today, because the Web Accessibility Directive has been enforced for quite some time. So the European Accessibility Act, here we go, I'm showing my slide. It's an EU directive, even though it's called Act. And it's, I'd just like to mention, if you're a company or if you're a private or a public economic actor with more than 10 employees or a turnover than, I think it's 2 million euros, then you're in the scope. If you're not, then you're what's called a micro enterprise and the Act doesn't cover you. So you don't need to conform, but you should, because it's good too and it's best practice. The goal of this directive is to remove obstacles that prevent fair competition, because that's what the EU does, but also to help people to have equal opportunities and to be involved in society. So that's the main purpose. Remove obstacles to prevent fair competition, because it's a trade union as well within the EU. And obviously we have equal opportunities to participate on our own terms that we would want as individuals. The European Accessibility Act comes into force June 2025. Lots of people worry about this. It is very important and it's actually quite welcome, but it means that everyone in society that imports products or services, they will need to be accessible. So that means basically most products that we have today in our day-to-day use, such as smartphones, banking, or e-commerce services, will need to be accessible. And most of them aren't today. The directive aims to improve the trade between EU members, EU countries, for accessible products and markets. So, for example, if you're a US-based company and you want to sell or export products to Europe, you need to comply. And the reason for that is because if I use an assistive technology and I buy something from Spain or Germany or Portugal, I expect that when I receive it, it will work because we're using the same standard. It's as with programming, you know, if you're using HTML5, then you're using HTML5. You're not, you know, making your own, you know, newly performed code base. And it's actually also purposed. There's a quote, which is, I think, says it all. The quote is to maximize the foreseeable use. And within any product or service, if you can do that, then you're really following both design for all or universal design, which is also something that is referred to in the Accessibility Act. Also, as mentioned before, the Act itself doesn't point to any standard or anything. It just says that we should follow a design for all approach. And because we're in the European Union, we need to follow our European standards that we have, that we've all agreed on. So the scope for the European Accessibility Act is a lot larger than the previous regulations. It actually covers both manufacturers, representatives, so dealers, importers, distributors, and providers of certain products and services. But not very small companies are not included or covered within the directive. So for example, just to give you a gist of what a manufacturer will need to ensure that their product meets accessibility requirements before they sell them in the European market. If they don't, that product is actually needed to be removed. So you won't be allowed to sell it. For example, you need to make sure CE marking, if it's a physical product, or that you you need to create a conformity assessment to demonstrate that you're compliant with accessibility standards. You need to have a roadmap of how you're building the product, and so that you can go back and forth in your product history to see what's going on and where to align that with. If you're an importer, same, you need to verify that the products that you import into the EU comply, and that the you're also responsible for ensuring that the manufacturer has carried out the appropriate conformity, and provide that contact information on the product or on the packaging. So there's a lot of small things in between that's never been done before that we now need to do. If you're a distributor, yes, you still need to make sure that the handling of products is good and that you're not affecting or disturbing the compliance level of accessibility. And of course, making sure that it conforms so that you're actually selling something that is allowed on the market. And service providers, we need to make sure that necessary adjustments to the services as digital interfaces, et cetera, so the user UI or the usability of them are improved. So there's a lot of things in between. Parts first. So we have computers, operating systems, and smartphones. That's basically a laptop with Windows operating system. You have an iPhone or a payment terminal, sorry, self-service terminals, which could be when you're at a shop and you're physically paying for something, you would need that to be accessible, both from a physical perspective, but also as a service as well. You would need it to be understand it. So maybe adding haptics, I'm not sure of the solution, it would depend on the service, but there's a lot of determination what that means. There are also electronic terminals for communicating. That could mean, for example, modems or routers, you know, internet transfer protocol, I think it's called. Digital TV, it's basically a smart TV that connects to the internet that you can watch YouTube on or download apps to. But also e-readers. E-reader is, say, the Kindle, I think, comes from Amazon, rather than just an iPad. So there's a lot of different, so it's everything from an ATM on the street, like the image on the slide. There's a woman standing in front of a vending machine where she's buying something from that self-service machine. That would need to be accessible as well. A check-in machine at the airport, a self-service terminal at the library, or a regular iPhone. Apple's done a long journey already, so they are quite they are very accessible, but it's very broad. If we go into the services, which is similar, the definitions of these, I've tried to simplify them because each of the bullets, as I will read in the directive, they're actually like a meter long. They're approximately 25 words to each sentence explaining one thing. So what's in scope for the European Accessibility Act when it comes to services are the following. Electronic communication services, which means video conference system, chat functions, emergency services, streaming services, I'm sure you understand that, but for example, it could be Netflix or Hulu. In the field of transportation, digital services. So that doesn't actually mean the bus or the train, but the service provided for the ticket machine or anything that they do digitally, buying the ticket via an app or booking is also required to conform. Then we have the ebooks and software that you put inside the reader that we spoke of in the product side for ebooks. We're looking at the standard that's called EPUB here, but it's not been signed off, but that's probably the way that it will go. But we'll see, hopefully before the legislation comes into force. as you understand, we're still working on it from the European perspective. Then we have the huge chunk of e-commerce. On the broad top context, even If a physical shop that only sells a small part of their content online, it's still an e-commerce according to the directive. So it could be, you know, anything like an H&M or a Zara or anything that you buy online. An e-commerce selling website clothes. So lots to do there. And then we have consumer banking services. Consumer banking services, e-commerce, they're actually also named as sector-specific requirements. There's a lot more in depth in each of these bullets that I'm not going to go into today, because there's actually 12 areas within the services that, that are actually even deeper. But consumer banking services is an online bank that offers, for example, account services, finance information, account details, payments, and so forth. There's a gray area, which I won't go into, but there's a discussion on how stock markets and insurance is included in that, because it depends on the bank and what they offer and how it's integrated into the app. So moving on, when it comes to conformance for both the area of products and hardware and services, we have what's called, and I like to call it presumed conformance because we don't actually know yet. So we have general requirements, which are stated in the directive for products and for services. And then they are what's called the sector-specific requirements, like I mentioned, banking, etc. And these are stated in the directive, so you can read them there. What isn't stated is the standards, because that's where you will get the technical know-how of how to actually do that. So I'm going to read out which they are. And for products and services within the ICT, it's the EN standard called 301549. When it comes to design for all, which is more of a checklist of how to process the requirements, we have a standard in Europe called EN 17161, which is a design for all standard. So design for all is very similar to your universal design. They have the same core, little variations, but otherwise basically the same. And then for built environment, like for ATM machines and ticket, physical ticket machines, we have the built environment standard, which is 1721 more. But yes, there are more to come. And I have a timer that is annoying me, sorry. But we also have document and support that is needed for all of these services and products. So if you're doing something, you need to follow all of those standards, but you also need to make sure that the support around the product or service is accessible. So the user can contact you or understand how it's to be used, or if they have a question, even the support around it needs to be accessible. So you need to offer multiple ways of feedback or support, for example, for each of this product or service. The good thing with all directives and possibilities is that there are clauses within both the Web Accessibility Directive and the Accessibility Act, is that you have clauses on what's called fundamental alteration and or disproportionate burden. So I'm going to explain both of them. Fundamental alteration means that when a situation where making the specific accommodation to the service or product actually changes the product so much in characteristic, it would become a new product. Then you can claim that I can't do this because it's going to be something completely else. And you would, you know, you would go about and you would talk to the authority and they would evaluate that with you. And if they agree on it, then you wouldn't, you would have that disclaimer for some reason, or that significant alteration wouldn't be needed. Disproportionate burden, on the other hand, refers to situations where the cost or the effort required to implement an accommodation would be so excessive or disproportionate in relation to the overall resource. I mean, it would just be so much worth. It's, for example, if you have a legacy code, if you have a code base that you've worked on for so many years and you've created your own system support around that, saying that you would need to exchange or update your core would be so, you know, it'd be so costly or timely, then you could also, it could be deemed disproportionate and you wouldn't have to do that. It would be not required. So there are possibilities, but it's, you know, we want things to be accessible. So by working with it from start, it's obviously more sustainable as well, a sustainable code is as well. For all of the mentioned directives, we have what's called national monitoring. So I described that little process with the three key areas, and the it's different from market to market, but with the Accessibility Act, it's going to be enforced by the sector-specific and national monitoring organizations, which I think is a good thing, because if just one agency or one authority gets the entire scope, we already have authorities for banking or e-commerce or security, for example, with cryptography, and I don't know all of them. But it's good to share the knowledge and also share the responsibility. So that's what's going to happen within the EU. And of course, there is possibility of sanctions. So I would like to share that just yesterday I read that Ireland has just stated they've brought the European Accessibility Act into their national law, which is called Transponded. And they've actually written, or the report that I read was that they have up to 18 months of jail for not upholding or not conforming to the Accessibility Act. So as you can see, each market and each country within the EU is doing their own thing, which is great, but they all have the minimum requirements of each of the directives. I'm going to go through just and explain the main standard that we work with when it comes to digital accessibility. And after that, I think Susie will take forth, and we've allowed a lot of time for questions, because I think it's better that we allow a dialogue than just us talking. So the three directives, as I mentioned, can't point directly to how to do things. This is how you do things on a technical standard. Instead, they say that we should approach the design for all standard. And as Susie mentioned, they need to be accessible for all, you know, they're for everyone. So it's up to us and the commission to say, okay, so what does that mean? And within the European Union, as I mentioned earlier, we have agreed on that we will follow the European harmonized standards so that we can have the free trade, we feel safe, and I can buy something from one country to another and they will work, etc. So that is one of the reasons we don't point directly to the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, which is a global standard. It's the core of web accessibility, absolutely, and it's actually also an ISO standard, but it's international, and thus we can't go to it directly. So what we've done instead is that we've brought it into the European norm, you know, the harmonized standard, as I mentioned, and we've packaged it into the EN 301549, which is the standard that establishes accessibility requirements for websites, documents, software, hardware, apps for the European region. So on my slide, I have a three-point diagram with an EU directive pointing to European law that then points to the European standard, which actually is that EU legislation always refers to the European standard. And there can also be regional standards. So for each market, there could be variations on this because of previous standards that have come in and they yet not updated. But they are the presumed or the minimum requirements that is needed. So EN stands for European norm. But there are markets that actually aren't part of the EU that follow these. Norway, for example, they've embraced the European norm because they're part of the Nordics, but they're not part of the EU. So firsthand, when there are accessibility requirements for ICT products, we look at the 301549. It's very good to have, you know, in hand if you're working with us. It states the accessibility requirements on all ICT products. As I said, it's 12 chapters, lots to read. And it covers, for example, smartphones. There's images on my screen now, visualizing a user with a smartphone, a person sitting in front of a screen. So screens are part of this, even the software on side or the zoom or magnification that's needed. A person with a check-in or a kiosk using that is also part of the directive. And the actual machine when you're boarding the check-in counter at airports or train stations. And of course, vending machines, as I mentioned before on the previous example. So to include all ICT standards, it's really wide. Digital requirements that we focus on today. But it also covers physical aspects and the environment of the product. So it's good. And as I mentioned, 9, 10, 11 are about web documents and software, mostly mobile applications. But and these chapters are actually a copy of the relevant requirements from WCAG WCAG 21AA. And I have a screen of what the document actually looks like for those interested. It's a visual of a page inside of one of the chapters where it's actually chapter 9, and it lists the success criteria from the WCAG. So 9.1 is perceivable, and 9.11 is text alternatives, and it goes forth. So it actually, you can see and you can feel safe that the WCAG is part of this. So it's very, very clear. And each of the sections are also linked if you have the electronic document with hyperlinks, for example, and it takes you to the update. We believe that this will be updated September this year so that it matches June requirements for next year. We don't know. There's a task force working full-time on this. I'm not sure what the status is as per today. We'll see what happens on the 28th of June, 2025. There is a grace period for certain products, but I'm not going to go into all the details of how and how long, etc. But there will be a little bit of a gray zone before we receive Praxis and Prejudice on it. Yeah. So that was all on the legal and the standards that we recommend that you look into.
Okay, so if it is expected to happen in September, out of experience, let's wait maybe next year.
Yeah.
It won't happen right.
I think so too. Yeah.
Okay, so now for finishing, I will be giving you some tips to address those laws and standards, because of course that all the theory is great, but we need to actually put this into reality. So let's start. First of all, something that is important and that there's a question about it, applicability. All the countries where someone can buy, use my services or products, I have to comply with the laws of those countries. So especially for huge companies that have like different branches and so on, they need to comply with all the laws of all the countries, right? So first of all, we need to understand what the directive or the different national laws or regional laws are requesting, okay? So that would answer the question, what do I need to comply with? Okay. Once I know that I have that information, I will set the standards. That would be, how do I technically achieve that? So in that, we could have like two different scenarios. One would be that we have a law that refers to a standard, right? Mm-hmm. It could be EN 501. It could be WCAG 2.1. Even WCAG 2.0, that is the case of the Argentinian law, right? And sometimes you will have these general laws that are anti-discriminatory, such as the ADA, that in that case, I will refer to the last published official standard, that would be in this case, WCAG 2.2, okay? So there, what we do, we set the standard. Remember that in let's say that in one country, we don't even have laws, accessibility laws. Mm-hmm. What happens in that case? If that country subscribes to the declaration, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, they may have other tools that for in order to enforce, you know, and make these human rights, you know, you could ask for, demanding a violation or whatever, you know. So you can use those tools because remember the first thing we said, it is a human right. So I don't necessarily need a digital accessibility law to be able to ask for this human right to be complied. So now, what the next thing we will do, we will list the products and services that must be compliant. Of course, that the idea is that we have everything we have, externally and internally in our companies, must be compliant. But of course, that we will prioritize in order to comply with the laws, right? We will prioritize those products and services that are part of the scope of the laws. So don't take this as, okay, once I comply with the law, I don't need to to keep working. No. So we start there because we want to, you know, avoid legal risk, but then we move and keep going to all the parts of the organizations, right? Number four, what are we going to do once I know what do I need to comply with, how I must do it, I list the products and services, then I run an audit. What does it mean? It's a test. It is a comparison. I will compare how my product and service is, and I will compare it against the standards and see, well, I am compliant with this point or not, right? That is an audit. Because I already have a standard that is external and I test my product against this standard. That's why it is called an audit, right? And we address the gaps, that would be the issues, and we remediate those issues or create a remediation plan. Sometimes it is better to wait. If I am about to redesign my page, for example, if I am going to refactor my page, you know, in a short term, then I might start from zero with accessibility. That always is the best scenario than remediating, right? And importantly, you must achieve accessibility, but you need to maintain accessibility. And sometimes it is one of the hardest parts. So learn from those gaps. Learn from those issues and see your software development cycle to the left, you know, like see when it starts in the very beginning of design, what are those things that I didn't consider and that made inaccessible my product inaccessible in the first place. Okay, so we will learn from those issues, and of course then we must integrate these new activities, this new knowledge, these things that we need to do, our team need to do, because it is a team effort that different people should be, you know, addressing and adding these new activities to maintain and to improve accessibility, because the standards are the floor of accessibility, not the ceiling. So we will start by addressing standards, but we will try to elevate that and go one step beyond and make sure that usability is part and that experience is a part of what we're offering to all of our users. Okay, so we integrate that. Don't try to integrate everything in one day. You know, just do it slowly. Do it at the pace that the culture of your organization allows you to. Don't get frustrated. It is something that won't happen overnight. Okay, So now for closing. Finally, this has been a really big cognitive load for such a short time. But let's close with some things that I needed. It's important that you take away from this talk. Digital accessibility is a human right. It is an habit. It is not something you do once. It's something that you do now and you adopt forever. It is a team effort. You don't have to be the superhero. And it is super important to understand that technological discrimination is a form of poverty and social exclusion. When we deprive a part of citizens of essential resources to develop and generate wealth is when we create these inaccessible products. 121 million people in the world do not have access to the internet. And for those who have access to the internet, 99% of our digital products right now are not accessible.
Okay. I can share that, Susie, that in the European Union, statistically, there's 135 billion people living with a disability. There's a lot. So it's about every 20th.
Yeah. Wow. Meanwhile, and especially after the pandemic, essential services and educational and employment opportunities migrate more and more to digital spaces every year. A digital space that is doing nothing to be more accessible. Making digital environments accessible has a direct consequence on the quality of life of people. And it is important that we know that everything that we do, if we do it accessible, we are changing someone's life. That here, the ones that we have the privilege to create the digital world, we have the power to do it, to give access. Okay. And finally, a quote that I love that is from Steve Jobs that says, technology is nothing. What is important is that you have faith in people. And if you give them tools, they'll do wonderful things with them. Mm-hmm. So you are the ones creating those tools. Have faith in people. Do it. Mm-hmm. It's better done than perfect. And most of all, our intention for today was to give you a tool to do this digital world more accessible. And now go and do wonderful things with that. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I'd like to end with a slide because this is something that we really believe in. There is no such thing as the average user. It comes from a lot of studies and user testing with personas that everyone makes, and it's a trend, but there's no such thing. No one's alike with the same needs. So ending with that. And back to you, Amber, for questions. I'm happy to bring on. I see that, as I agree with Susie, there's a lot of interesting questions there.
There's a lot of questions, actually, because
but they're good questions. I love them.
Well, this has been a phenomenal presentation, so thank you. And we'll hopefully we can work through all of these questions. I'm gonna go sort of in order, but I'm going to skip that one and come the first one and come back to that one sort of at the end, because I want to touch on things related to the presentation first. So Marsha was asking if the directives apply to AI. And I feel like you probably give a whole presentation on AI, but what do you think?
There has just recently been passed a directive on AI within the European Union. I think it came in January, so it's still quite fresh. It will absolutely do that because of inclusivity needs. There's the bias that we need to take care of. So as today, I'm not aware of any regulations or anything on such or standards, but I know that we are working on it.
Okay. Yeah, I can imagine, though, if you're using a chat bot, that in particular, right, that would fall under the communication sort of directive.
Yeah, but not only the service itself, but actually the AI and the algorithm behind that. So say if you were using an AI functionality with an HR recruitment service, the AI may not understand a diversity of facial expression, or the user may not, because of impairments of disability, may not also understand the AI expression. So I think we're going back to like beginning of 1980s with maturity of AI, you know, so people, computer interaction and needing to learn from there. Yeah.
Yeah, something else is that, in the States, it is already a requirement because the ADA says everything must be accessible for everyone. So it is included. It is important to consider those technical limitations because there's still technical limitations to new technologies. The same thing happens with XR that I think that someone asked something about it.
Yeah.
But...
and VR.
That is another thing that we must consider when it's technically impossible to do something, right? And in order to comply, because the law cannot request you to do something that is impossible. Another important thing is that, of course, that AIs right now are fed by data that comes from an inaccessible digital world, because people cannot, you know, that needs accessibility cannot interact with the very same products that take that data. So it is pretty biased right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They would need to be fed a preamble of lots of information first. And then, you know, but we're not there yet. It's still, that's what I mean. We're still Stone Age cavemen with AI, I think. Yeah. My opinion.
So Lilani asks, what happens when you comply with on the EU level, but you fall short on certain national laws? Who has the say when a conflict occurs?
Well,
I think, it is the national law that is the minimum requirements that you need, but the national law is the one that you need to conform to. Unfortunately, you would need to look at that, even though you're meeting the minimum requirements of the directive.
And I'm assuming you would need to follow the national laws for any nations where you do business.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you don't sell to Ireland and you don't have any employees in Ireland or anything like that, maybe you don't have to worry about Ireland's. But if you're in Germany, you got to do Germany, that kind of thing.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but something that is important also is that when you comply at the regional level, and then you don't, and at a national level, proving that you address the regional one can be interpreted as good faith. That it's not that you don't want to comply with accessibility. You have been actively working in accessibility.
Yes.
You are still developing. So that, of course, that you cannot say, well, because I don't know the law, it doesn't apply to me. It doesn't work like that. But... Mm-hmm. What could happen is that maybe you won't get the, let's say, for example, a sanction. Maybe you will get a warning and you have 1 year to comply now with the national laws or something like that.
Exactly.
So it is, it is better than not complying with any with any directive or law.
Yeah. So a follow-up on that, Isla had asked a little later, was if a business is in the United States and is selling to the EU in 2025 and their website is not accessible, what is the chain of events? Would their website be blocked? What do you think might happen?
It's not a European website per se, but if they have the support functionality or support or service for that product or web service that they have, then they would need to comply. If it's a product and they're not meeting the chain requirements, then their product would be taken off the market and they would receive some kind of fine or a sanction. Yeah.
So basically the chain would be a citizen of one of those countries might complain through an official complaint form, and then the government would investigate and contact the company if necessary.
Yeah, so that's what we've understood. Yeah. Okay. As we said, it's not in force yet, but everyone's trying to agree on the same things. Yeah.
On that note, on the complaint process, David had asked, is the complaint process that Anna mentioned across the entire EU? Do you have any links to documentation that explains that requirement?
Yes, it depends on the market. So what the Web Accessibility Directive says that in the accessibility statement, there needs to be a feedback form and a complaint a statement. That differs slightly from market to market. It could be generalized. The complaint goes to the monitoring authority in that market. So there's always an authority that's regulating and making sure everyone's doing the thing. And the complaint goes to them, and then the authority will inquire and investigate.
So the complaint may be more at like a regional or a national level versus like one complaint for everyone
national.
Across the UA.
It's national, yeah. Some markets, I can't specify which, but I know of some markets that have a different process where they send in the accessibility statement to the authority rather than publishing it on the website. So slight variation, but on the main, it's sending it back to the authority.
Okay. So on that note, I like how we're just like setting these up. Marsha had asked, are the accessibility statement formats consistent across countries?
No, it is.
I'm going to yes, I hope so.
No, but accessibility statements don't have a mandatory structure, let's say. Of course that you have to have some specific information there, but if you comply with that, you can add more information or just comply with those points. Yeah. But I highly recommend there's a template in the W3C page and go there and use that as a minimum, and you can add more information after.
Yeah, our accessibility checker plugin also, when you install it in WordPress, it creates a draft page that's based on that template that you can go and edit. And I think it's because an accessibility statement isn't really a legal document. Sometimes you are legally required to have them, but it's not like a contract or terms of service or something.
Exactly.
Like that, right.
Yeah.
So you have a little more freedom in how you word it.
Yeah. And it's very useful for our users because there I can tell them like, what is the level of compliance of conformance, to the different features in my page. And if I'm planning to improve something or by given date, I will fix something, so they know and they know what to expect.
On the other side of reporting issues, Neil had asked, does the EU recommend a particular VPAT? Is it just the international VPAT?
Yeah, VPAT, the version 2.0 is the one pointed out in the EN 3.01. So yeah, it would be VPAT 2.0.
Yeah.
Okay. And then David had a question about how will vendors show they are compliant with the EAA? Is that just the accessibility statement and a VPAT, or is there something else that needs to be done?
A vendor as in an e-commerce, or it depends on the
That's a
product or
great.
service as well. Yeah, because
So
it's
it's going
different
to depend
depending
on the
on.
kind of business.
Yeah. So I would go with Susanna's tips on seeing, you know, what is the problem, what is the service, and what's needed to do there for each of them. So there's
Yeah,
no yes or no on that question.
but if you as a vendor, let's say you want to show that you're compliant, then you can have a BPAD that is up to date. You can have an audit, and use it as a proof that your product is accessible.
And if you work at like a university or some entity and you're searching for, like you're doing procurement, you would want to ask for a VPAT. Is that what you'd
Yeah,
recommend?
that's yeah, that's the best practice for procurement to ask for a BPAD.
So Marsha had asked, do some products get to the marketplace without conformity? And if so, how are they injected?
Well, complain, support, and then removed or revoked, depending on them.
But I like the first part of the question. Like, do some products get to the marketplace? Yeah, 98% of them they actually go out to the market. And right after, you have the feedback from your users, like, well, this is not accessible.
So we're kind of at time, but I do have captioner for a little longer. Are you okay with kind of doing some of these quickly? Does that work for both of you? Okay.
Sure.
All right. And if anyone else has to hop off, we will have the recording with all the questions so you can come back and just listen to the end if you want to, or listen to the whole thing. Okay. Let's see. So a question from David for the scope of the EAA. I believe that it mentions that it covers computers and operating systems. What about business-to-business software or software that a company uses to run its business? Do you have any clarification on what software is in scope?
I love that question. Business to
Yeah,
business. It's
that is one of the
like this big hole.
most asked questions about EAA. Well, EAA is not clear about B2B, actually, but my personal opinion is that it is a little bit of a paternalistic way of, addressing people with disabilities, because they are not perceived as the ones, oh, the business owners, the people that needs that kind of digital products. And if you want to change the world, we need to start addressing that. So, but even if
So
it's
like an
not the,
accountant can be blind,
yeah,
and
it's
the
like,
accounting software needs to work for blind people too, right? Is what
exactly.
you're
And
saying.
but also that, even if it's not in the scope of the EAA, that doesn't mean that it's out of the scope of the law. Because if you have other laws that, take care of the right of people with disabilities to work, right? In that case, you have to have accessible software for your business, because you must be able to hire people with disabilities. So that it is important to know that maybe something is not in the scope of EAA, but it might be in the scope of other laws.
Absolutely, because in the European Union we have we've got regulations and directives on discrimination. Age and disability is 2 points of those. We have the rights of being employed, so that you can fulfill, you know, the rights of employment and that you can perform your actual work. So as Susie says, there's other conformity that we can that we should uphold, even though it's not business to business.
You might have touched on this already, but just a quick reminder, how will the EU Accessibility Act be enforced? In other words, how is it ensured that the directive is complied? So I almost wonder if that's like at the nation level.
Yeah, so that will be the national monitoring, that little loop of the three areas. So there will be some kind of national, and it's still being put into place into the different countries. Some have it already in place, but generally you have an authority that will monitor and govern. It could be a shared responsibility or it could be the one. And they will report back to the European Commission as we do with the Web Accessibility Directive. So we've had reports, I think, is it 3 or every 5 years? Yes, we do report back on the status. And from that, we get new recommendations of tactic or actions or research that we need to do to improve the accessibility level in the European Union.
I'm going to skip
I wanted to add something else.
Yeah.
Other things that states do to enforce is sanctions, of course, but most important, public policy, right? Because I love this quote from Lizzie Chiama that was said by a lady that I highly recommend her, the AxCon talk she gave. It says that the legal framework gives us permission to dream what is possible, right? So it will tell us what would be the ideal world, you know, like, well, everything must be accessible. Awesome. That's the law. But the law doesn't create reality, you know, per se. So how do we change our culture, people, organizations? Well, for that, usually states create policies, and through policies. So we will see a lot of that in the next years, right? Like different resources that we can learn about, different actions, events, and things from the states in order to help, you know, people comply with the EAA.
So I want to skip down to Marisol's question about, do you know a list of the countries that it says transponded the act to local laws? Is there a good place to find all of these laws?
Yes, I was going to say, I will email you a bunch of further reading and links, because the European Commission has gathered. So all the directives are actually published in English, easy read, and also in each of the national languages. So both the national law will be published in English and the local language, and the directive is also translated into the various union market languages. And they're free. They're in HTML, PDF, and one other format that I don't remember. Yeah.
Wonderful.
And I will also send out the standards as well. Yeah.
That would be great. We'll include them with the recording for everyone. Dean had asked, do you have any information about Article 32 of the EAA? It says 2025 to 2030 seems to be a bit of a gray area. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Yes. So he's talking about the grace periods for implementation of the various regulations or when it comes into force. So it's binding from June next year. But because of the product's physical placement or cost, for example, ticket machines all over Germany for trains, that's going to take a long time to update all of the machines for a physical aspect to the required accessibility, you know, height and length and width, or I'm not sure of the physical requirements as such. So the grace periods are usually for those really hardware physical products until 2030. Some are even until 2045 for, you know, the long-term ones. I think for 25 to 30, there usually is a little bit of a gray period because we need to enforce the law, then we need to understand what it actually means on local level, how will we enforce it, and what is needed to be done. Is still a little bit of gray zone. So that even with the Web Accessibility Directive, we had a gray zone before we could work on it. So I think now, only 5 years later, we're more on track.
Do you feel like this grace period is more applicable to physical accessibility versus a website?
Not really. I think in comparison to the cost and nature of the product or service. So if you have a mobile app, you would be expected to update that. The same with a phone. Within your next deployment, you would probably need to consider the accessibility needs if you're developing a new keypad or such. I think it's more in parallel to what the type of product or service is.
Yeah, also,
do you have anything else on that, Susie?
Yeah. Yeah. One of the critics around that is that then we have a risk of 2025 not being perceived as a hard, you know, hard deadline, right?
Yeah.
But it is important to understand that it applies to all of the services or products created prior to the 2025 deadline. Yeah. And technology usually moves really fast. So it might be really difficult in 2030 to have something so old, you know, still going on. So if you have to do it again, if you have you created that after 2025, then it must be accessible and comply with the AA.
Yeah. So Lonnie had said it's going to be tough to comply with all the individual laws since the laws will be published and effective at the same time in 2025 because some nations haven't, some are ahead and some haven't. My thought on that, and I'm curious if you have the same, is like start now and just strive for WCAG and maybe that will put you in a good place at least as a baseline. I don't know if you have any other thoughts on that.
I agree. Yeah. Minimum requirements are always going to be a good start, and they are best practice today. So, you know, you will get a long way with that.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, what the law is trying to do is enforce accessibility. And if your product is actually accessible, then it will be in some way complying with all the laws.
I'm looking through, I'm trying to figure out some of these. I feel like we've covered a little bit. So the electronic communication services include AI chatbots. I think the answer on that was just yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And chatbots. Yeah. Doesn't have to be AI, but chatbots also. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Robert had asked about how the penalty works. And I think it's going to be different on every nation. And you're going to send some resources or maybe links on where we can find that information.
Yes.
I don't know if you have anything else to add. In the minute.
I think the penalties will be on national level sanctions and through the monitoring agencies. I haven't heard of a specific general sanction, not to my awareness.
Yeah. Well, some in the last weeks, I think, or months, a big airline was, had a penalty.
Yeah,
from the state.
Yeah.
And that's like a fine.
They got a fine that was not that big. Actually, they got a fine, you know, I think it was 90,000 euros. And is not a lot for the huge airline like that.
For an airline.
But yeah, until they are not accessible, they cannot access to benefits from the state. That would be things they cannot submit to, you know, the different discounts they may have in the taxes, like different, you know, other things they get. And actually, they publicly accepted that that part was harder and more damaging than the actual fine.
So like if you were getting grant funds or like tax credits, then you might lose those too. That's interesting. And then, of course, you mentioned the Ireland law, which I had to go tweet because that's the first time I've heard that jail time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It was a post by Nomensa. I think they shared it. I think it was a TPGI. I'll look into it and send you the link also.
Yeah, I think I can also post. Maricel just posted a link in the Q&A, which I'll put over in the chat for everyone about that particular airline. So we are at time with our captioner, but I think we've mostly covered what was in this. Can you all give a quick, like, if someone wants to follow up with you or get in touch with you or find you on social, what's the best place?
LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Yep. Funke, LinkedIn, or just Anna Malmberg. Yeah. I can.
I will leave my handle there, and you can find me like that or as Susana Pajero, or without.
Yeah, I think
you can
I'm
find
the
me
same there.
On LinkedIn.
And Funka is just funka.com.
Yes.
Great. Well, thank you both so much. This has been phenomenal. I know I learned a ton, and I've seen a lot of great chat messages from everyone. So we very much appreciate you sharing your expertise. So, all right, I'm just going to wait for the captions to catch up, and then I will end this. So everyone have a wonderful day.
Thank you, and thank you for being here. Yeah, it was great.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.